Basically for me, I kind of use fear again as that motivation and not letting it catch me. It's like a race. So it's like, you know, can I push myself past that finish line before fear catches up?
Welcome to the Heroic Minds Podcast, where we discover how to get out of our own way, unleash the full capability of our mind, become the hero of our story, and a hero for other people.
From an evolutionary perspective, we've evolved to manage threatening encounters.
I want to do everything in my ability to help them, but they make the call.
We have to do it in a way that doesn't just assume that going faster is going to be the cure-all.
When you suffer and then you come out of it on the other side, you stand a little taller, your voice doesn't shake anymore, your eyes are always up.
Sorry to depress you guys. Self-doubt is par for the course. It's just how you choose to deal with them, react to them or not react to them.
A little tough love goes a long way, and high expectations also goes a long way. The more you expect of someone, the more they'll do.
I have to keep moving forward. No good comes from going back.
I don't need red tape. I'm not into rules. I'm not into regulation. I'm just going to do this.
Welcome back to the Heroic Minds Podcast. On today's episode, we have Ryan Strasnitsky. In 2018, Ryan was a couple days from his 19th birthday playing for the Humboldt Broncos Hockey Club when the bus crashed. The crash left 16 people dead and 13 injured. Ryan was left paralyzed from the chest down. But in only 3 months, he was getting back onto the ice as a sledge hockey player. His goal now is to represent Canada at the Olympics. This is one of those episodes similar to many in the past where it is not complex psychological or philosophical ideas that do come up on this podcast, but rather a call to action. A form of positive meditation, if you will, on living a resilient and courageous life no matter what. So I really hope you enjoy it. And I hope that you also join in and following Ryan's journey to playing for Team Canada one day. Before we hop into the episode, as always, our friends at True Local that continue to innovate, continue to evolve, and continue to be the best high-quality meat delivery company that is out there. That's trulocal.ca, TRULOCAL.ca. You go on their website, you decide when you want your meat to show up. It shows up frozen, individually packaged. Each package is labeled. You know where it's coming from. You get to decide when it shows up. And there's no hidden fees, no hidden costs, nothing. The meat shows up, you take it out of the box, you put your meat in your freezer, and then you recycle the box and you decide when you want that to show up again. It's outstanding. So if you want to give them a try, use my discount code HEROICMINDS25, all capital letters, to get $25 off a regular size box and $10 off a personal size box. Alrighty, here we go. Well, an area I want to start is when you're leaving the hospital, if you could paint us a picture of how that happened and what your thoughts were and what the expectation was, even in that first day of leaving that hospital, what was going through your mind?
So my story is kind of complicated as far as leaving the hospital. So around May of 2018, I got asked to go to Philadelphia for a rehab center down there for spinal cord injuries. So, you know, it was an early morning. The day I left was like 5 a.m. from Foothills, and it was kind of cool. Like they paid for a private flight down there and everything. So, you know, it was pretty special. But, you know, leaving the Foothills, I was just like, wow, like I've kind of started my new life here. And I'm leaving it to go somewhere else. And, you know, I landed in Philly. I was pretty tired. I could barely keep my eyes open. And I guess there was like right outside the ambulance, there was cameras and lights and everything. And people were trying to ask me, and I was trying to look over, and I just like, immediately fell asleep as soon as I got to the room after questions. And from there, I lasted about a month in Philly. And leaving Philly that day, I think my whole family was there. And it was my first time getting back on a plane, but in a wheelchair. So I had to kind of learn the ropes that way and learn to transfer and kind of push myself past my limits. And, you know, I got home, and unfortunately, my house wasn't renovated yet. So, you know, we had to stay at a hotel for, I think it was like 9 or 10 months in total. But the first day we got there, I had my room set up and my jerseys were all hung on the wall. And, you know, I kind of took a deep breath by myself and thought, you know what, this is, you know, it could be worse basically. And, you know, I was just thinking in my mind, like, all right, starts now, kind of like, where does the work begin? And, you know, obviously going to take some time off from the hospital, and Stampede was just right around the corner. So I went out with all my friends and had the time. And yeah, that was about it. So I was just basically looking forward to, you know, putting in the work and starting my new life like this.
When you say starting a new life, what comes to mind mentally when you say that?
Yeah, I think both mentally and physically. I mean, mentally, obviously, you have more of an appreciation for things. I mean, you kind of think back, like, you know, you hear all these stories and you're like, oh, it's never going to happen to me. It's never going to happen. But you never know that. And obviously it happened. And I think mentally I was just like, all right. You know, I knew the extent, and I was just like, I've always been the one to be working hard no matter what it is. And my next goal ahead and not really dwelling on the past, being mindful of it, obviously, but not, you know, letting it get a hold of me. And yeah, I think just mentally, I think that's when I really put into perspective, like, you know, this is, you know, your life now, like you're going to have to, you know, do something about it, get as healthy as you can, try to get walking as fast as you can. Right. And, obviously it's been a struggle, you know, here and there at physio, sometimes you get frustrated because there's things you couldn't do or now that you couldn't do before. So yeah, there's been a whole mix of emotions, I think mentally though, but you have a more of appreciation for things and life. And physically, I think obviously not being able to walk and learning to live life in a wheelchair is the biggest change. And yeah, I mean, that's about it, honestly. I think just having more of an appreciation for things and kind of just wanting to put the work in to get as healthy as possible.
Yeah, I you leave me speechless because, like I said in our earlier messages, you are the classic, I guess, heroic person. You are checking all the boxes of the mindset that it takes to be resilient. And that is why I need to open up your doors and unpack that even more. I have to ask the question, when it comes to mind out of the gates that you realized, okay, who knows where things are going to go, but what happened and we can't change that. How did you come to terms with that out of the gates? Even the fact that friends were lost, like what allowed you initially? I mean, that sounded like you got back from Philly and it was like, okay, let's get to work. What allowed you to just get to work and push aside the other baggage that I would assume would come with a situation like that?
You know, right away from Foothills, I mean, having to do physio twice a day, I think a lot of it comes from, I always set motivation in the back of my mind, whatever the case. I mean, obviously for my teammates who aren't here and my coaches and stuff, and you know, just terrible for everyone else. And I kind of use that as motivation and pushing through it and not letting life get me down in a way. So for me, it was all about, you know, setting goals for myself, small goals, big goals, whatever the case. I mean, obviously big term goals is, you know, getting back in the ice as soon as possible. But in the now, I guess, right where when it happened was, all right, what's the next step? Like what kind of physio? I mean, they were giving me one physio a day, I think, for 4 days out of the 7 days. And it was like 20 minutes long. And you know, I just got bored, right? And I asked for more physio and more time in a chair to get used to it. And I just kept pushing myself to see, you know, where my boundaries are and if I could just push past them and get better and stronger.
Could you talk about the fear that may have been, and I would say more fear of how far can I push myself, fear of how am I going to make this work type thing? How did you deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, I have fear of, you know, things today. I mean, like, oh, we got to go to this place. And I'm like, oh, what if it's not accessible? How are we going to make it work? And I'm, you know, sometimes worried about that, but you know, in the end, it's just about actually doing and pushing yourself past those limits to actually get used to it. And I think the biggest thing for me, now is, you know, if I have to get into my sled is like floor transfers, like getting in and out of my chair on my own. So, you know, obviously having people around you, sometimes it gets to you and you're like, oh, I wonder what they're thinking. But there comes a point where you're just like, you know what, it doesn't matter. I'm just doing it for me. And I mean, yeah, as far as the fear aspect of things, it was like, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I know that I can line myself up for more probable success if I work hard and, you know, just put in the work and just have a positive mindset. I think I know a lot of people who are in chairs who, you know, didn't really put the work in or have not so positive thoughts all the time. And it just, you know, kind of leads nowhere. So basically for me, I kind of use fear again as that motivation and not letting it catch me. It's like a race. So it's like, you know, can I push myself past that finish line before fear catches up? So it's so weird to think about how my mind works like that. But in a way it's like, all right, how am I going to, you know, push past today, get that extra 100 meters ahead.
Wow. So if you feel some type of fear coming on, it's okay. How am I going to move? How am I going to change? How am I going to react to not outrun, but avoid this fear from taking over or having more power than it should?
Exactly. Yeah. I like being in control. So anything I can do to get that advantage.
I think that's fantastic. And it comes up all the time on the podcast as individuals manage to, and that's such an important word, is that control. In the situation you're in, how is there points where you have let go of some control?
Yeah, I mean, on the physical side, obviously, I can't do the same things, obviously. But, again, I like to think that you can control what you can control. And I know it sounds cliche, but control or not, can't control what you cannot control. So things that I can control are obviously, you know, my attitude and how I get around and, you know, asking others for help, which I'm not used to. But, you know, again, it's pushing yourself outside your comfort zone. So basically, and then there's things I can't control. Like, for example, if a place has stairs, right? Just nothing you could do about it. I mean, I've seen guys who've been in chairs for years and years and they can do stairs like that. But, you know, I'm just fresh new. I don't know the skills yet. So again, it's just kind of a waiting game that way. But again, it's just controlling what I can control and not letting what I can't control get to me.
Wow. Wow. And now you sound so courageous and resilient. Could you dive into a time where things were dark and what pulled you out of that, or maybe who pulled you out of that through this recovery and learning process of, as you said, this new way of living or this new life?
I mean, I've always had this saying, I guess my dad always told me, is that when one door closes, another one opens. And ever since, you know, the Pee Wee hockey age group, which is about 12 and 13, I believe. And, you know, I've been cut from top teams, you know, where you should have made it. And, you know, every time you get cut, it kind of puts you down a step, right? And you kind of think, oh, am I that bad of a hockey player? Or, you know, did I deserve that and didn't get it? Or you just get mad and all these, you know, negative emotions get to you. But, you know, he's always been there to kind of tell me that, you know, there's always a door open. And the biggest example of that I can remember was Midget AAA, where I was trying out in Strathmore. And, you know, there was, you know, 500-600 kids trying out. So I thought I should have, you know, gone a little farther than I did. And ended up getting cut, then transferring up north to Leduc near Edmonton. So I tried out for the team there kind of on a one-day tryout and ended up making the team. So, I guess when another door closes, it's just another one opens up. And I've always looked at it like that and just trying to be positive. And, you know, he's basically been there to pull me out of those dark times. And a lot of it comes to from the inside, but mainly him and, you know, past coaches and stuff.
Now, keeping on the topic of your dad, as I said, just reading the, and I'm sure everyone in your family is outstanding, but in the articles, it did outwardly appear as if your dad was just this optimistic individual that I could relate to in certain ways. My dad's very similar. And you, when they came to see you in the hospital, you would initially out of the gates had said, sorry. And I wondered if you were able to understand where that came from, where that apology came from.
It's tough. I mean, I'm one to say sorry all the time. I just, I never want to get in someone's way or, you know, I just wanted to, I think the biggest thing was just make them proud. And, you know, I told them basically when I was younger and I've had all these doors shut in my face that I wanted to get to the highest possible level, whether that's, you know, as high as it sounds like the NHL or pro hockey or something like that. I think that was my biggest goal and I worked pretty hard towards it. And I feel like that, you know, because it didn't happen, I just felt bad because, I mean, that was my biggest goal. That was my dad's dream to see one of his kids play there. But I don't know. I mean, it just kind of all these mixed emotions happened at once. And I felt the need to apologize, I guess.
Wow. I find it's incredible when you're so passionate about something and it appears as if I have such a incredible relationship with someone that you do want to apologize right away, is as if you let someone down. And I think that speaks, as much as it is hard for someone else to hear you say that in that moment, I think it speaks volumes to the how strong of a relationship you have and how, you know, how much you do want to do well for your family and by your family. I think that's outstanding. But I think the response from your father was even more moving. And he said, when you told him, you know, I can't move my legs, and your dad said, I don't give a shit about that. You're alive and we'll focus on that. Can you unpack the optimism that your dad, I'm assuming, I'm making a huge assumption here, but there just must be optimism just beaming off of this guy at all times. And what has his role been in your recovery?
Yeah, I mean, he's always been there. He's been the one to drive you to morning skates, you know, ever since stand up to sledge. And, you know, he's always there, sometimes driving me to physio or driving me to appointments, whatever the case. And he's always there. And, you know, you're right. He is a pretty optimistic guy and he's never one to panic. I mean, even when we're playing like darts in the garage, like he's never the one to be like, oh, I'm not going to get this shot, or like, all right, here's the next shot, it's going in type thing. Yeah, he's just you know, very optimistic and never panics really. So it's pretty cool to see, and I'm trying to, you know, take something away from him.
Cool. And how is your, or has your relationship changed at all with your family and maybe even your dad through all this?
I think we've all gotten a little closer, obviously. I mean, I'm going to need a little more help around the house, learning to live on my own in a sense. So whenever I ask for help, they're always there. So it's been good that way. They're a little more cognizant of what's going on, and you know, things might not always be easy. So I mean, they're always there and they're always helping out. So I think it's definitely gotten a lot closer.
On both sides of the topic, because the outpouring of support, it just showed the power of community, and it was amazing, which I'm sure you already totally understand. But what were the positives, and were there some stories of some people, you know, really going out of their way? And to be devil's advocate, was there ever time where it wasn't good, or someone said something that they thought was positive but wasn't, but it wasn't, you know, a great experience? What was that like with all the different interactions with people all over the country?
It was crazy. I mean, our whole team got support from around the world, and you know, I've met a lot of people who came to visit me in the hospital. I know a lot of NHLers, and you know, Bret Hart, who used to play or used to wrestle in the WWE, and just guys like that. And Rick Hansen came to nice. Visit, and he's a really cool guy. And I think, you know, I take a lot away from him, and he's an incredible guy, and he's done a lot in a chair. So I try and use those guys as motivation. But you know, I've met a lot of people, and I can't thank them enough for the support. And there was no like time that I can remember where I was, you know, upset of someone visiting or something they said. But going out in public, I know a lot of people, you know, they do things that I don't know, I don't really consider respectful in a way. I mean, you know, they put your hand on, or their hand on your shoulder, and they kneel down and try to talk to you and be like, oh, it's gonna be okay, it's, you know, so proud of you, pal. Like, it's just like, it's nice, but in a way it's like, you don't have to do all that. You know, I'm just a normal guy, just talk to me, right? So
right,
it's just something you have to, you know, get over and just, you know, let it go by your head or something. So yeah, I mean, for the most part, everyone's been really respectful and supportive, and again, I can't thank them enough.
In accepting this whole situation, and we already talked about, you know, starting this new, potentially new life, new way of living, in your identity yourself, have you changed your values? Have you changed who you think you are, how powerful you are, what you're capable of through all of this? What's that journey been like?
Yeah, I mean, before, obviously, I mean, I used to be, you know, pretty confident in my abilities, and, you know, had things lined up for the future that I thought were going to set me up for success. And, you know, there's some things, you know, I could have been a little more humble maybe, or just, I don't know, just change little things about myself. And obviously being in a different, you know, I guess different perspective, I've definitely taken more things into consideration, like other people with disabilities, for example. I mean, I've met a ton of them going around Philadelphia, Calgary, and, you know, I've got to learn their story. And before, I wouldn't have never guessed, you know, that their lives are different from, you know, everyone else's lives who have a disability. Like, no matter, you could have the same disability and live a totally different life or have a totally different story. So I guess understanding it from a different perspective, again, is just, you know, obviously it's humbling, and, you know, you learn a lot about a person, and, you know, you gain respect for a lot of people. So I think for me too now, it's, again, it's a lot of motivation. I mean, I've met kids who, you know, didn't get to live a full life till they're 18. So, you know, they've been born with disabilities and they never got the chance to play stand up, which is, you know, some of their dreams, right? So definitely a little more humbling now. And I think my values kind of stay the same, where I'm, you know, trying to reach the highest point possible that I can with my sledge hockey career and how far I can go with physio. So I guess those values haven't changed, but I've definitely gained a lot more respect for people who play adaptive sports. And just trying to take every day like it's my last, honestly. And I know it sounds cliche, but you know, you never know. So I just kind of take things into consideration and stay a lot more humble and courteous to others, and just be a little more respectful, I guess.
Do you think you take, would you be willing to take more risks now, as in the approach that, hey, I don't know, when you never know when something could go wrong, or are you more hesitant to put yourself out there? And you, yeah.
I mean, at the start, I was a little more hesitant getting out there to the clubs and to hockey rinks and, you know, wherever, just anywhere in public. But now it's like, you know what, like, whatever, you know, this is who I am. And, you know, not everyone's going to accept it, but, you know, they're not important. So I just kind of live life. And obviously taking more risks. I mean, as funny as it sounds, I mean, you can't really get hurt anymore. So I'm definitely pushing myself outside my limits, trying to find new things on my own, trying to be independent. And I mean, it's all a learning experience. You gain from stories, and, you know, people will always be there to help you out no matter what. So not too worried about the other things, but definitely pushing myself outside my limits more.
I love it. And so beyond sledge hockey, what are other things you've done outside of your comfort zone? Maybe even it's socially, not even physically. Like, are there things that you're doing now where you're like, you know what, I'm living like it's my last day. Like, I'll do it. Is there anything new or funny, interesting you've taken on?
I mean, I was single for a little bit, and then I was, you know, trying to go on dates, and, you know, dating in the chair, just like, it's weird. I mean, I've had some date stories where I'm just like, hey, like, do you mind grabbing my chair out of the back of my car? And they're like, I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, that sounds so weird. At the end of the night, which is nice, and, you know, go on dinner dates or movie dates, whatever you call it, like, whatever. But, it was just like, it was different. But then it got to a point again where I'm just like, yeah, whatever, this is me. And, you know, if they didn't want to talk to me, they wouldn't be there. So there's stories like that. But I mean, for the most part, I think going out to clubs or bars or whatever the case, I think you're having your friends there and just having a good time is always fun. So a lot of funny stories that way. But yeah, again, for the most part, it's just been every day kind of pushing myself further and further and seeing what I can do and what I can't do. I remember one time I was trying out new wheelchairs, and there's a super lightweight one, and I was like, I was loving it, but it was shaped weird. So it was really tippy. And I remember doing bands on the hinge of my door, trying to do a workout. And I went back a little too far and ended up falling out. And, you know, the chair came with me, and I had to text my dad and be like, hey, I need a hand. And, you know, I'm flopped out on the ground, and he comes down and it's just like shaking his head. So there's always new stories. They're funny, and, you know, you learn from them.
Cool. I take it you tend to push the envelope more times than not. I'm starting to understand.
Yeah.
Well, what comes with that is also, you know, pushing the envelope. It's kind of like, I'm curious to what, like, you want to see what you can accomplish. Do you have, again, we're going to get to the sledge hockey, but do you have dreams bigger than that now? Do you have dreams, you know, has this taken you outside of that hockey aspect? I mean, I know and believe that you're going to represent the country in sledge hockey, but is there something bigger than that?
There's been so many things. I mean, now that I, you know, live in a chair, there's more things that you notice that maybe think people can change, or you know, places you go can change. And I think the biggest thing for me, I know it sounds a little far-fetched, but changing the world, obviously. I mean, a lot of people want to change the world, but for me, it's the specifics. And I know, I can't remember the percentage of the world that has disability or lives in a, or is in a wheelchair, but, you know, finding something that you can benefit, that you can use to benefit others' lives, I think, in a way you can use worldwide. And I think that would be kind of cool, doing something like that, or, you know, speaking my story. I know a lot of people do it. And I think, you know, there's so many options I can go, and the connections I've made, they just have so many avenues that, you know, I can explore. But for now, I think, just speaking a little bit, talking to people like you, and just, you know, getting my story out there, getting my name out there to kind of get the ball rolling and get my connections and avenues opened.
Well, you are well on your way. Keep doing what you're doing 100%, because It's outstanding. I feel like you're, I'm talking, it's like a movie script. Like you're just, you're, again, you're checking off all these boxes. The surgery in Thailand, how do you even comprehend that experience, that opportunity? Are you hesitant? Like, where do you, you know, a trial surgery, what's that? What was that like, first of all, making that decision as a family, thinking, yeah, let's do this. Let's fly across the world and do this.
Well, it started at my physio clinic here in Calgary. And I know there was a quadriplegic who used to be a doctor, and he actually did the surgery before me, and he got it done. He did the research, and he's, you know, he's all for it. And, you know, so I got into contact with the people out there, and I've, you know, watched a lot of testimonials before that. And, you know, I've seen nothing but good results. So I talked to my dad a little bit, and, you know, as a family, we decided that this was the best option. This is the best thing out there right now. So, you know, if you don't hop on it, right, you might miss the opportunity, or, you know, it just might be too late. So, I think, the biggest thing was obviously being there for how long we were, and, you know, the cost of it all. But, you know, in the end, it was so worth it. Like it was a long time gone, but because I've done the stim, I think it's benefited my life in more ways than one. So, you know, it's got a long way to go, and I think it's definitely a step in the right direction.
So when you say a long way to go, what was the surgery promising, or what was the goal of the surgery, short term and also long term?
So short term was to get the muscles going. So before, I did a series of tests before the surgery, and I wasn't able to move anything, or no muscle twitches, nothing, like no function that way. But after the surgery, I was able to use the stim device and implant it inside me to move certain muscles and to get going. And, you know, for me, being a T2 para means I have like no core. So being able to use a program for me to flex my core during workouts or during sledge hockey has improved immensely. So there's also assisted walking, which there's a video on my social media of me in sort of this walking brace where, yep, you know, the people are assisting my legs in a way, like they're guiding them, whereas I'm, you know, controlling the lift of my leg and the ankle flexion and, you know, the actual stepping motion. So, no, there were so many things that went right. And obviously, again, being away from home, there was a lot of factors that went into, you know, is this really worth it? Like every once in a while pop into your head. But then again, you know, I'm talking to friends back home, and I'm talking to my dad, and he's always there again, and just saying, you know, push through it, you know, get through another day and see how good it gets. So there was on and off days, but for the most part, I think putting in the work has definitely helped out. And because of that, I've retained more muscle in my legs. So they're less likely to atrophy. And yeah, the walking's gotten a lot better, and just keeps progressing.
Incredible. So the long-term goal is walking then?
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
And now that leads me to the big question is, when you think about the potential of human beings, physically, mentally, I mean, this whole experience, but I think even more so flying across the world, getting this surgery, having this realization that, okay, who knows what the potential is? How has that changed your belief in not humanity, but in humans individually? Like how it must have changed something in you.
It shows the potential, right? I mean, a year and a half in, and there's already this device out for spinal cord injuries. And I know it's just like, we have such a high ceiling. And I think through hard work and obviously a positive mindset, I mean, for someone like me who had absolutely nothing, having the stem device and being able to start to move things, I think is obviously a step in the right direction. And, you know, everyone's done their research, and everyone keeps coming up with more things. And I think we're in the era of technology, and it just keeps improving every day. So, you know, who knows what can come out, you know, 10 years from now, right? So, again, it's just staying hopeful and, you know, always keeping your avenues open. And I think it's just all about who you know. Like if I never went to physio and knew the person there, I would have never got the surgery done. So, again, it's, again, just, I think the main thing is just staying hopeful, because you never know what can happen.
And now, what's been the most difficult transition?
I think the biggest difference I've noticed is transferring everywhere and like having to use my arms and shoulders for everything. Using them every day, constantly, just like, it could be an overload sometimes, and you got to take break days. But, you know, being a high caliber athlete, you never want to take days off, and you just got to keep moving, right? So it's hard to, you know, just sit there knowing that it's good for your body, but like you just want to get going. So sometimes you have to loaf around and do nothing. But yeah, I mean, something as simple as like getting up in the morning, right? You have to get up and transfer into your chair and then transfer into a shower chair. And the whole time you're like lifting your whole body up and, you know, having to use your arms for absolutely everything, like your arms or your legs, and for me and my core as well. So it's a definitely different way of looking at things. And obviously they're a lot stronger now, but I think, I think it was just, that was the biggest change, was just having to use it and learn to keep them healthy at the same time.
Begs the question, you know, patience. Do you have a different understanding of patience? Have you had to train your patience a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always one to, you know, get up and just go right away. As soon as I, you know, as soon as my brain's woken up, it just starts racing of what things I have to do and what I can do and just anything to get better in a way. So for me, being patient is something I need to work on still. But I think it's in the long term, I guess patience is helping me out, I guess, in the fact that, you know, kind of waiting for technology to come out and, you know, the next best thing to come out. So as far as long term, yeah, the patience is there. But, you know, short term, every day, for example, it's like, you know, you just got to get going right away.
Day to day, when you look for motivation, inspiration, is there someone, something that you look to that you know that's what's going to keep you going? I think in a lot of these stories, someone will talk about a family member or a book they read, an idea, a quote, a concept. Is there something that you have that you can always turn to, and doesn't matter how dark it is, that's going to be that glimmer of light?
There's so many things. Obviously I have the motivation of my teammates and coaches, and I know I have the support of many people around me, and that kind of motivates me. But the biggest thing for me, I think now that I have the opportunity to do it, is I have a Team Canada from 2018, Team Canada jersey from the sledge team. And, you know, have that thing right in my sight, you know, all the time. So, you know, I'll be on my stim bike where I kind of work on my leg muscles, or I'll be sitting on the couch or doing whatever. Right. And it's always kind of there. And, you know, once in a while, I'll glance over at it and know what I'm doing this all for. And in the end, I think whether I can, you know, walk again or do whatever, I know that one thing's for sure is that I want to put that jersey on one day. So definitely that's the thing that keeps me going, I think.
Well, I'm hopeful. And I know a lot of other people in this country sure are. So what do you know the time span from when the accident happened to when you got on your first sled? Because from the outside looking in, it was like, holy smokes, he's already on a sled. Like, how is he doing that?
Yeah. So the injury happened in April. So, and then I got on like mid July. So about 3.5 months later.
Walk me through that first experience.
It was like, all right. So my mentor and sled coach, Chris Cedarstrand, he played on the Paralympic team, and he had ice out in Okotoks, and, you know, he had a sled set up, and he was one of the first guys to reach out and kind of introduce me to the sport and the adaptive world. So, you know, he set up ice one day, and we took me and my family and my girlfriend at the time. We all went out there, and he helped me get set up and showed me how to, you know, sit in a sled properly and how to hold the sticks. And, you know, I got out there and I was like, whoa, it's like, this is weird. But I was lucky enough to be out there with him and kind of watching him skate and, you know, setting a goal for myself, you know, one day I want to be at that, in that position. But yeah, there was a lot of mixed emotions, I guess. Being out in the rink is just, you know, it's like time doesn't exist, and, you know, you're just mm-hmm. having fun out there, just enjoying yourself and kind of forget about the disability and everything that's happened. So in a way it's sort of a stress reliever.
Are there any other sports you've taken up since, or anything else you've tried? Or
I haven't, no, but I've been wanting to try like a summer sport as well, because sledge hockey kind of goes year round, just like stand up. So it's tough to kind of mix in another sport. So
okay.
Another wheelchair for sports. It's like down here somewhere, but yeah, we can definitely set that up sometime, and maybe I'll just shoot hoops or something. Who knows?
When it comes to dealing with the emotions of other people, to other people that, whether if it's they feel bad, whether it's family that's upset, how do you approach that? How do you reconcile or help people work through? And maybe it's a parent, you know, I teared up watching your family members talk. How do you help work through that emotional pain together?
I mean, I've had a lot of people like say they feel sorry or sorry for everything that's happened. And, you know, I don't really have an answer to it. I just say, you know what, thanks. And I kind of keep going on with my day, but it's like, it's so hard to wrap your head around. I mean, I don't really know how to respond to someone saying, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, I'm sorry this happened to you. And it's like, yeah, but at the same time, you know, there's so many other people who are, you know, who have had worse incidences or accidents, and, you know, they're in my position or even worse. And, you know, I'm pretty sure they don't feel sorry for themselves. So in a way, I kind of just let them deal with it however they want to deal with it. And for me, I just try not to feel sorry. I don't feel sorry for myself at all. And, you know, this is the way life's taking me. And I'm kind of, in a way, I guess I'm saying to life, like, F you type thing, or giving it the finger and just, you know, kind of not letting it get the best of me. So, I mean, people can, you know, feel whatever they want to feel, but it's, I think more importantly that obviously I'm there for my family members, but, you know, random people, they can think whatever they want to think. But for myself and for my family members, I think, you know, the story, like, they don't feel sorry for me, and they're, you know, treat me just as if nothing's changed. So I think that's the way I want things to be, but you know, you can't always control other people.
Not to now go rewind to the start, when you reflect on the incidents, is there any type of, you know, if it's, whether it comes out in dreams or does it come out in certain times where memories that make you feel a certain way, is there memory of the event that you also have to work through or that you've been, you know, counseled through? Is there anything along those lines?
Not really. I mean, obviously having to deal with so many things coming at you at once, I've really been one to go talk to a counselor or seek help. But I think recently I've done a few classes, I guess you want to call them, and have talked to someone a little bit, and it's obviously helped. But I think for the most part, I've been okay that way. I just try and keep busy so much that it doesn't come up. So, you know, whether that's hockey, working out, or, you know, just hanging out with friends, I think just trying to keep my mind busy, I think, steers away from all that. So, but no, I have seeked some counseling, and, you know, plan on going once COVID is, you know, slowly dying down. I think it's definitely, you know, it's worth it. It's healthy. But before that, I would have never been the guy to go seek help.
That's good stuff. Now, to conclude, I don't want to start talking negatively, but at some of the things I'm seeing and the things people are complaining about, it's sometimes I have to shake my head, and I'm sure you see that as well. If you could give a message to people that are dealing with change, what is your tough love? Maybe it's what is your message to those people?
Well, to start off, I think change is inevitable. So it's always going to happen no matter who you are. So it's kind of like, how are you going to deal with it? How are you going to, you know, turn it into something positive, and, you know, kind of work through it and get past it all. And, you know, in the end, I think your future self will thank you for the work you do today. So for me personally, I think, you know, if I choose to work out, you know, and train hard the one day and I get a day off tomorrow, or I, you know, feel better on the ice the next day, I think you look back on that and being like, oh, I could have sat around and kind of let the day take me over and not do anything. And, you know, I'm kind of kicking yourself in the butt for it. So I think change is always going to happen no matter who you are. It's kind of all in how you handle it that's going to affect your future.
Yeah. This has been outstanding. I am so excited to share this. I've heard some people that reach out and say they just like listening to this podcast because they can listen, and all it is inspiration. You know, it's not complex ideas all the time, although we do have that, but it's just someone that you can listen to. And I already know I'm going to re-listen to you answer these questions and be like, geez, pull up your socks. Be a little more courageous and resilient. Who do you turn to for that?
Oh, geez. I mean, I don't really watch too many podcasts or listen to them, but for me, I'm really into the comedians. I just watch something like that to kind of make you happy, laugh, and you honestly forget about everything and just, you know, you're focused on that. So, you know, I think any bit of joy and happiness and a bit of laughter every day can, you know, change someone's mood. So I think I wouldn't necessarily call it inspiration, but it's just something to help you change your mindset.
Yeah. Separate yourself from reality sometimes is always a nice little, you know, vacation without going anywhere. I like that. I appreciate that. Well, Ryan, again, I think I've said it too many times now, and because I don't want to edit this, I'm going to stop saying it, but this has been absolutely incredible. I'm so pumped to follow along. I'm so pumped to know you now and be able to follow along. And I know the media will be all over your journey. And I know the whole country's pulling for you as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing everything occur, especially with, you know, with the incredible family you have behind you. I can't wait to watch it all play out.
Well, good. I just want to say thanks for letting me to speak. I don't really think I've had an in-depth interview like this, really. I mean, with all the questions. So, you know, I appreciate that. And, you know, hopefully it all turns out well.
That brings us to the end of another incredible, inspiring Heroic Minds podcast. I encourage you to reach out not only to Ryan, but reach out to me if you want to keep any of these conversations going. And I've started to have listeners recommend guests or topics. Please send me an email. I'd love to hear who you want to hear from, what kind of topics you want to hear. I am flexible. I accept constructive criticism at all times because I want to continue to improve in what I'm doing. And most of all, thank you so much for listening. I'm Ben Finelli. This is the Heroic Minds Podcast. We'll talk again soon.